Hello, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here talking about another week of financial education. What's going on, Ryan?
Not much. I'm repping my Detroit Tigers hat today.
I see that.
Because Detroit is playing the Mariners in the playoffs here. Game five coming up. Big win today.
Is it game five already? God, I don't follow football, man. So that's crazy to hear that we're at the 5 mile marker, you know, into the fall. Man, time flies.
Yeah. And you know what? We're not going to cut this out of the episode because I'm talking about baseball.
Oh my God. Because it's okay. All right. So, well, yeah. I've had my head down.
So not only do you not follow football, but you don't also follow baseball, which is totally fine. I don't follow baseball either until the very end.
Okay. Fair enough. That's so funny.
Let me do you a favor, Tate. In October, that's when you got to pay attention because that's when like football's going on, baseball's going on, right. Hockey's just getting started. Right. And then you can disappear for the rest of the year. How about that?
You know, it's because I live in a place that's warm and nice. And well, even though I sit in office, you know, all day, but you know, the rest of the country's starting to get cold and the leaves are turning and it's getting dark earlier. So it's tough. It's tough, you know?
Not everybody can have fall foliage, you know? I mean, you're missing out. No, well, today, you know, we're really excited to talk about a little bit of mindset. You know, I think as pilots, we're trained to know everything, right? Let's be honest. Like, we're the top 1%, right? We're the know-it-alls. We're the, you know, this, there's very few of us. And, you know, we go to a check ride. What do we got to do? We got to know everything. We got to know our limitations, our memory items, our flows, our checklists. We got to know what to do, how to act, how to respond, and things like that. And so that kind of trains us to be a little bit of a higher ego caliber, right? Yeah. You can say you can always judge the pilot's ego by the size of his watch. And we all have big watches, right? So, but, you know, that doesn't play favorably into arenas where we don't know things, right? And so sometimes we mask our lack of knowledge with things like not admitting that we don't really know more about investing. We've all flown with this guy, right? That or gal who's like, oh, yeah, it's my 401k. I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. I don't have time, you know, for things like this. And so, we really wanted to kind of talk about that today and just sort of talk about how you really got to get vulnerable, I think, in some of this stuff and really admit that you don't know. And I think the sooner that I was able to sort of, you know, personally in my journey, kind of admit that I'm like, what are you talking about? What does that term mean? You know, the more I realized a lot of people didn't know what they were talking about either. And the quicker I sort of gained ground on investing education. So, Tate, what are your thoughts on this?
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
I think that as an entrepreneur, one of the measures of success is how long someone is willing to be a beginner at something and how long someone is willing to look stupid. I think as we get older, we are afraid to be beginners at something and to admit that we don't know and to look stupid and to ask stupid questions. And I think that that is a skill, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're just someone who's trying to take control of your finances. I think it's important to be humble and to be willing to ask dumb questions and to admit that, you know, you don't know a whole lot. That is one of the threads that's going to be throughout the conversation that we have today. Today, we're really talking about why pilots don't get rich. How does that happen, right? Why don't doctors get rich? Why don't pilots get rich? Why, when you have $500,000 per year W-2, with this massive 401k, and I'm not talking about like, you know, you're comfortable, of course, you know, upper middle class, you get to go on vacations with your kids, you live a great life, you live in a nice house. What I'm talking about is multi-generational wealth. Why don't more pilots get to that next level? That level where you look over and go like, wow, that person really has it, at least financially, figured out.
Totally. And you know, we all know that like income does not equal wealth. So because you have a high income, it doesn't make you wealthy. And because you have a low income, it doesn't make you not wealthy, right? So we know these things are out there. And, you know, we always say, you know, what You know, it's not about what you make or what you earn. It's about what you keep.
Pro athletes are the perfect example of this. You know, somebody's making $20 million a year. You're talking about your baseball stars, right? How many pro athletes are there stories? I mean, the history is littered with pro athletes that made all this money and they have nothing to show for it in their later years, right? Because it doesn't matter what you make. It matters what you keep. It doesn't matter whether you make $10,000 a month or $5 million a month. If you spend it all, you know, it's just is not going to lead. But it's not just about saving.
Sorry, I'm laughing. I'm laughing about the baseball.
I'll take that one on the chin, man. I'll fully admit. And again, you know, I'm willing to admit when I'm naive on something or a beginner on something.
There you go. See, there you go. See, and how much more fun is that, right? How much more fun is just being vulnerable to like what you don't know?
I got a funny story. So when I was in third grade, something like that. So I didn't grow up with sports. I grew up skiing. I was in Bozeman, Montana. Anybody knows where Bozeman is? From 4 till about 14, I was in Bozeman. And so I did a lot of skiing and mountain biking and outdoorsy stuff. But I was, you know, my parents never had cable TV, so I didn't grow up watching sports. And they, in third grade, they did the most mean thing you could ever do to a third grader. They stuck me in Little League. And I had no idea how to play baseball because I'd never watched it on TV. So we're about halfway through the game and I turned to another kid in the dugout and I said, hey, when's halftime? And they looked at me like I was a space alien.
I love it.
So, I have a long history of not being a sports guy, but I'll admit to it.
Well, I wanted to transition, you know, speaking of, kind of getting to retirement, making sure you have enough money and running out of money. The topic I really love that we focus on quite a bit in the show is talking about what a 401k really does when you retire. And so, you know, a lot of pilots get out there and they say, I max out my 401k and I'm good. And so my curiosity has really gone to like, well, how are you benefiting from your 401k today? And you're like, well, what do you mean? I'm 40 years old. I'm not going to touch my 401k until I'm 59 and a half and I have required minimum distributions. That's when I'll start benefiting from my 401k. And, you know, I always kind of like to talk about this issue of, you fill up your 401k like a balloon, right? And then when you get to retirement, you're basically just poking the balloon and slowly letting the air out, or I guess untying the balloon, letting the air out slowly.
Right.
And basically distributing cash from your stock account until you completely deplete your earnings. And hopefully by then you've died or passed away and you've had a good retirement, right? And so what the one thing that I love about diversification, especially into things like real estate, is that if you put some real estate in your portfolio, and this isn't a guarantee, but generally it's going to appreciate. It's going to actually get more valuable as you age and get older, and it's also going to generate cash flow, right? And so why not pair that as part of your retirement strategy, having some cash flow coming off your real estate and having some appreciation while you go? And so I think where people go wrong though sometimes is they go all in on real estate and they go buy every single thing that they have with real estate and they don't diversify into the stock market. They don't go buy stocks, bonds, mutual funds. They don't do things like private credit or debt funds or things like that. They just go all in, or they over allocate to real estate, and that can get you in trouble because all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I have no money that I can touch because it's all in illiquid assets, right? So, you know, I've seen pilots do this, and you know, they get excited about something and they go after it and that's great, but they kind of over allocate. Or, you know, Tate, we were talking a little bit earlier today about like the notion of like chasing the shiny object, you know, oh, look at crypto, I'm gonna go all in on that, right? or becoming a day trader and becoming highly speculative and just being like gambling with the money, right? I really do want to kind of talk about like, hey, how do you think about like putting money in buckets for diversification purposes, because I think this is an important topic to really get into.
Absolutely. So to be fair, we're not tearing down 401ks. I think it's a wonderful vehicle and it's a great part of your financial plan, but it's not the whole thing. It's a later bucket. We have later buckets, we have medium-term buckets, and we have now buckets. Let me break down what I mean. A 401k is a perfect later bucket. It's money you cannot touch, and you're not going to be able to touch it for a very long time, which is great. And the fact that it's tied up in the stock market is great because it keeps you, you know, it saves you from yourself, right? It just goes in there and it sits by itself. We have medium-term money, which is a lot of your syndication deals. Most syndication deals, passive real estate deals, have 5 to 10 year time horizons on them. Those are illiquid assets that are a little bit shorter in time horizon. They also give you some near-term tax benefits, which are great. And then you have your now bucket, which is your passive income. And I've said this on the show before, I'll say it again, passive income isn't passive when you're building it. You have to put the work in, you got to convert cash into cash flow, right? And I think, you know, for guys and gals who are younger and have a longer time horizon, have a bigger mountain to climb in terms of equity appreciation and building their nest egg, people want to be more equity focused. You want to be, you know, taking a little bit bigger swings. But as your net worth grows, as my net worth grows, I love debt products. I want to start sweeping these big wins into private debt that generates cash flow. And that way, you know, when you get to retirement, you have your 401k, it's play money, and you have a steady stream of income that will never run out. You can pass that down to the next generation.
Yeah, I always like the military pilots, you know, that maybe fly for FedEx. They have the barbell strategy. They have the 401k going on, they've got the pension going on, and then they have their military retirement, and then they have their real estate syndications that, you know, really give them kind of three streams of income in retirement. Like I've talked to guys that, you know, they've got $500,000 or $1 million they want to put into real estate that's going to clip a 8 to 12% coupon at some point. And then they've got the military retirement and they've got the, you know, the FedEx pension. I'm like, man, that is like, that's awesome. You know, like that's like really going to help your retirement kind of be enhanced. But, you know, there's also the now factor, right? So like, I know this is not a get rich quick. It's a get rich very slow and long and prolonged and very like, you got to really be active in it. But like the other thing is when you get real estate in your portfolio, you're also going to get some tax benefits. And so it's not what you earn, it's what you keep. So when you have these real estate holdings in your portfolio, it's going to provide you with some depreciation. And, you know, I know we talked about on previous episodes, you know, the guy that came to our happy hour and he had the $100,000 deduction for listening to what we do. And that's really cool, you know, because he kind of listened to the short-term rental strategy. Yeah.
For anybody that doesn't know, we had a happy hour in Houston for Passive Income Pilots. This was in conjunction with the bus tour. There was a pilot who came with his tax return. He brought his tax return to the bar and said, "You guys saved me $100,000 on taxes because I implemented the strategies that you taught me on this podcast." I'll fly with people who haven't listened to the show and are sort of closed-minded. They're like, I fly the line, I pay my taxes. And it's like, okay, that's great. But when we're talking about mindset and willingness to be a newbie at something, willing to learn, you know, you can really change the financial trajectory of your life if you just dig into a few of these principles, a few of these.
And guys, this is no different than opening up your pilot contract and understanding what you have available to you as a, you know, an airline pilot, right? Like, you know, he who knows the contract holds the gold, right? Is the famous saying. And so getting into your, you know, collective bargaining agreement and understanding what kind of scheduling things you can do in vacation time that you have and how to maximize your days off. That's exactly what this is. It's literally the same thing, but it's for financial education. So like, I encourage you, if you're going to sit and plan your life, know your contract and know the tax code and know how to put money in different buckets that's going to pay you today, help you depreciate money and retire really well. That these are the things that you should be thinking about where you spend your time and hanging out with people that kind of have that sort of same mindset. Like that's another thing is, you know, the five people you spend the most time with is kind of who you become, right? And so if you're hanging out with people that are really understanding the contract, really understand, those are great. And I understand, you know, we all get kind of stuck with that gal or guy that you're flying with that want nothing to do with anything that we're talking about. And, you know, that's when maybe you can, you know, if you get slam clicked, you know, hey, listen to the show, listen to a podcast about saving taxes or whatever. Get out of that. Get out of that like bad mindset. But it is really important. I mean, to be, you know, in that frame of mind where you're constantly learning about how you can improve your situation, and or just being around people that share those same things. And that's why we wanted to start this community, and where we all kind of accept that, hey, there's different varying degrees. Like, you would be surprised what I don't know about investing. Like, I'll just put that out there. Like, I'll be the first to admit.
Right. Absolutely.
That, like, I'm sure, like, 50% of the pilots that came to me and they're like, hey, do you know, like, how to trade, or do you know how to do this? I'd be like, wow, you're teaching me a lot about that, right? Now, I'd probably school you in real estate, but, you know, hey, like, that's cool. That's fine. That's totally fine. And I would expect that, you know, after doing this for 10 years and having all this experience, that I'd hope I would love to offer that to you, right? But also at the same time, like, there's things that pilots are doing day in and day out that are just much, much better. And I strive every day to kind of learn more about that personally by listening to other podcasts and being educated and things like that.
Funny you say that. I'm sitting, as we speak, in the JW Marriott in Scottsdale, Arizona, attending a 2-day real estate mastermind because I want to be around really high level people that are doing things in movers and shakers in the business. And so I pay a lot of money to be part of this group. I'm here for 2 days, starting to dig in tomorrow with a bunch of these people on business strategies, you know, what's happening with the real estate markets. I mean, this is how we dedicate ourselves to this. And so anyway, Ryan and I definitely put our money where our mouth is in that respect.
You know, when are we going to start our own mastermind for pilots? I think that would be kind of fun to do, by the way. Hey, you know, listeners, if you like that idea, you know, shoot us an email. Tell us if that's a thing that you'd want us to do. Because me and Tate spend a lot of time in circles of people that, you know, like masterminds, and I'm involved in a bunch of different professional organizations that help me. And it's a great place to not only just talk about what you're doing financially, like that's one part of it, but really talk about the family side too. Cause I think it's so important for you to have like a peer group that can, you know, help you. You know, we're all going through the same thing, you know, boys and girls, like we're parents, absolutely, we have kids, we have financial stresses, we have education that we're trying to figure this game of life out. And so having that sort of shared experience with each other is really important to get, and especially if everybody's kind of, you know, getting vulnerable, talking about what's going on, everybody in the room is going to go, yeah, I'm dealing with that too. Like, I would love someone to get, and then there's going to be somebody who's in the room who's like, I went through that, I can help you, right? Or let me share what I experienced when I went through that and give perspective.
Well, I think we've started a bit of a community with the Facebook group, but of course, you know, I think I had to kick out two different spammers in the last 36 hours.
I don't know how they're getting in there. I mean,
yeah,
it's weird. So Tate, I want to transition to the 5 mistakes that keep pilots from getting wealthy. And I want you to go first. I want you to tell us the number one, right? Maybe it's not the best one, but it's the first one. Go ahead. Take us away.
I think it might be the best one. So number one of 5 is lifestyle. It's the paycheck trap. So it's living like a rock star before you build the wealth. And this is the problem, the upgrade problem, right? You see the other captain that's got the, you know, the Porsche or the Mercedes, and it's that lifestyle creep. You see all these other pilots that have the Rolex, and they got the nice house. It's hard as you're increasing in your pay, especially for pilots. I get it. You've been broke for so long, but it's this weird dichotomy where, I mean, pilots will deadhead 1,500 miles to save $100 on airfare, right? They'll do anything to save $100, but then they'll buy a $10,000 golf simulator for their garage. It's this weird dichotomy of like, I'm super cheap over here, but I'll splurge over here. Avoid that lifestyle trap, at least in the short term. What's next, Ryan?
Number 2 is, I would say, the investing knowledge gap, right? What I talked about a little bit earlier, where you think you know it all, you think you're doing all the things, and there's a heck of a lot more to learn. I say, you know, you don't get old in life until you stop learning. And I think we hear that I max my 401k out, I'm good. And it's not wealth building. That's just doing the bare minimum that the company lets you do that they do anyway, right? So let's get out of that false sense of security. That's just the airline retirement plan, right? We already know it. It's like autopilot. it's great until you get into some turbulence, right? So let's, you know, you don't want to get into analysis paralysis. You don't want to become a day trader, but just, you know, think about diversification in your portfolio. I always give the 30-30-30-10 a tip. You know, 10% of your total net worth should be liquid at all times, 30% in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, 30% in managed money, and 30% in some assets like real estate syndications. And so, you know, think about diversification. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can Google that. You can look it up. Get educated. Tate, what's number three?
Of course, that's not financial advice.
Never.
Do your own due diligence. Number three is mindset. It's ego over education, and it's safety bias. As pilots, I think, you know, we've already talked about it. You know, it's a little bit of a hit to your ego to submit to being a student, to ask a dumb question. To say, yeah, I don't know. I need to go take a course on this, or I need to join some sort of a mentorship group. You're obviously here. You're listening to this podcast, so you're on the right track. But it's also safety bias. Pilots crave predictability, but of course, wealth building requires measured risk. There is no millionaire, billionaire in the world that didn't take a risk in their life. And of course, you, if you're a pilot out there listening to this, you took a risk by going and taking an intro flight, or, you know, going and getting your private pilot's license. You took a risk, and that led you to where you are today. You have to take calculated risks on your way to becoming super wealthy, and you have to be willing to look stupid in order to get there, in order to learn.
I couldn't agree more. Ready for number four?
What's number four?
I think it's really the best one. The silent thief, taxes, right? So we've had tons of episodes. Go back to episode 10 and 14, the best episodes on taxes. We'll have another episode on that, but basically you're a W-2 earner and the IRS hates you. They are going to tax you the most. Guess what? As an airline pilot, you've got nothing. You got no tax breaks. They took away all your deductions. They raised the standard deduction. There's nothing you can do as an airline pilot. Period. You're going to pay the most taxes and that's it. Now, there is things that you can do outside of the airline pilot world that can position you to better prepare and better be saving on taxes. But you got to do some activity that allows you to do that. You got to do things like short-term rental loophole, bonus depreciation on real estate, buy some rental properties, become real estate professional status, invest in a syndication, at least get distributions for tax shelter during the hold. Do 1031 exchanges, invest 1031 exchange money to DSTs. The list goes on and on and on, but the taxes are going to eat you alive. And so, you know, getting into the real estate business, that's where the magic happens. Depreciation lets you lose money on paper, still win on cash flow. And, you know, again, let's get into cost segregation, bonus depreciation, what things with that are. Position yourself like the pilot did at the happy hour where you can save on taxes. Tate, take us home. Number five.
I think number five are social and cultural influences. Peer pressure, right? It's who you're associated with. It's your family upbringing, your relationship with money. It's hangar talk. It's bad advice. It's people that say, boy, that sounds risky, instead of, oh, tell me more, I don't understand. And I think it's social influences in your life that don't lead to growth mindset. I think that's number five.
And you know what? I want to leave you with a book before we sign off. The Psychology of Money is a great book.
Love that book.
The author, Morgan Housel, is an excellent author. And here's the thing. You know, I actually watched him speak at an event once and got to meet him, and it was really cool. And he said something to me that really made me think, which is, if you think about all the wealth in America over the last 100 years, when do you think we actually had peak prosperity? And everybody kind of raised their hands, and everybody kind of guessed at like the 1950s, you know, right after World War II, we're coming back, you know, we're building, we're baby booming, we're doing all that stuff, right? And the reality is that most Americans didn't have hot water in their homes in that time frame, right? Like, the wealth disparity was, you know, it was not as bad as today. And the problem, Tate, is that we're all on Instagram, social media, Facebook. We're all so connected. And the reason why you feel poor or you feel less well off than everybody is because you can see how wealthy people are all over Instagram, whether it's true or not.
Exactly.
And so you feel so much farther behind, and it creates this psychology that you've got to catch up. You've got to do those things. You've got to buy all this stuff. And if you don't, you feel like you're poor. But really, as a society, we're so much better off than we were, you know, 70 years ago, of course.
This is the exact same thing. There's a book by Peter Diamandis called Abundance. And one of the questions he poses in the beginning of that book is, do you think that more people die of natural disasters today or 50 or 75 years ago? And most people say, oh, way more people die of natural disasters today. There's more natural disasters today, right? There's more earthquakes and hurricanes and climate change and all this terrible stuff. And the answer is a resounding no. It has dropped off dramatically. It's just that it's right in front of your face. You have it on your phone because every, you know, it's like, look at any aviation accident. It covers the whole world hears about.
Totally.
So you have access to this stuff.
Yeah. Take a step back. Like, you've got a really good lifestyle and you can save a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we say, hey, you know, don't go spend it. And then you might be thinking, well, when do I start spending it? When do I start enjoying my life today? And so maybe that might just mean like scheduling out a goal for yourself. Maybe you want to clear, you know, $20,000 a month of passive income or $10,000 a month of passive income. And then you back into that number, right? Maybe it's, you want to make 8% on $1 million passively every year. So that's 80K, right? Divide that by 12. There you go. You want to have that and you want to clear all your expenses, you know, come up with that number, that goal, and then kind of work backwards into that goal. And I think that's where you can start to kind of realize, okay, once I get $1 million in the bank and I'm making 8%, or, and guys, this isn't for millionaires, right? This could be $100,000, $50,000, $25,000, $1,000. You know, with my kids, this is what I tell my kids. They're 8 and 5, and I want them to learn about passive income. And we're sitting around the dinner table the other night, and I say, look, how much do you want to make? If you have $100 in your bank account and you make 8%, how much are you going to make a year? Right? Divide that by 12. And when you get older, you know, you might want to you might have $1,000 in your bank account. If you make 8%, what is that going to pay you in passive income? $10,000, $100,000, right? You know, get in that mindset of how that money can work for you. So before you put it in something stupid or something that's just purely entertainment, you know, it might not be stupid, but, you know, less financially savvy, like think about where it could go that would earn you passive income. And then once you get to your number, then you can start it. Maybe you reward yourself with something nice, right? Instead of like, hey, I have the money in the bank, I'm going to go buy the Porsche. You know, how about I got the money in the bank and it's generating enough money to cover the car payment, or it's generating enough income to where I could buy one with the passive income that I generate for the next year. That's the time to maybe say, hey, we're going to celebrate a little bit. We're going to take some chips off the table because we still have to live life and have fun, right?
It's about getting on the front side of the power curve. You know, please don't put yourself on the back side of the power curve by taking on a bunch of debt on depreciating assets. This is the only time that I'll agree with Dave Ramsey is don't lever up the boat and don't lever up the Porsche and all these other things, because now all of a sudden 30%, 40% of all your credit hours per month are going to service the debt on these items that are losing value. You're on the back side of the power curve. What Ryan's saying is, you know, you get that cash on temperature into assets that are now appreciating in value and cash flowing. Now you're on the front side of the power curve and you're using that passive income to fuel the toys. And it's wonderful because once you get on the front side of that power curve, it accelerates.
Well, this has been fun. If you want to join a community, join our Facebook group. Tate mentioned that earlier, Passive Income Pilots.
That's right.
And we really appreciate you guys tuning in. And
absolutely.
You know, if you haven't in a while, leave us a review, like and subscribe, go on the podcast, leave us a review. We love the feedback. Unless if it's a bad review, then we don't love it. No, I'm just we'll take any.
Well, and I know that this is more of an aspirational episode, but we'll bring some nuts and bolts next week. So thanks for tuning in.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Catch you on the next one.